Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. In 1998, the most powerful man in the world almost fell from grace. Bill Clinton was impeached for lying about an inappropriate relationship with a White House intern. And she wasn't the first. Serious allegations dating back years, including a rape charge, were defended and deflected. Times have changed. Now there's a deep cultural awakening, and some Democrats are rethinking how they responded to Clinton's misdeeds, very bad behavior. This hour On Point, coming to terms with Bill Clinton's past and lessons for right now. You can join us on air or online. Do you remember that time? The mood of the country. Compare it to what's happening now. Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me first from NPR West in Culver City, California, is Caitlin Flanagan, contributing editor at The Atlantic. You can find her piece headlined Bill Clinton, A Reckoning, at our website, onpointradio.org. She also wrote a piece headlined What Hillary Knew. Caitlin Flanagan, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for having me.
Well, it seems with every day comes a new accusation of sexual misconduct. Today it's Charlie Rose at CBS, a second accuser against Al Franken. This morning, Michigan Democratic Representative John Conyers, the longest-serving member of the House of Representatives, admitted he settled a complaint against a former employee who was fired because she says she would not succumb to his sexual advances. Caitlin Flanagan, you write that in this moment, in the midst of this huge cultural shift we're experiencing, that the Democratic Party needs to make its own reckoning with one of its most important figures, former President Bill Clinton. Explain what's at the heart of this.
Well, you know, when Bill Clinton was in his political life, he was accused repeatedly of two very different kinds of sexual events outside of his marriage. One was that he had girlfriends, most famously Jennifer Flowers, who came to light right before his first election. And for all that America is often called the sort of prudish, sexually repressed country, America understood that he'd had this affair and that his wife hadn't left him, and he was elected nonetheless. But on the other hand, very, very serious allegations, substantive allegations, came to light throughout his presidency that he had, while governor of Arkansas, he caught sight of an attractive young woman named Paula Jones at a conference in a hotel and had her summoned to his suite at that hotel, revealed himself to her, showed his penis to her and told her to kiss it, that a woman named Kathleen Wiley, a very different kind of woman, a sort of sophisticated urbanite, well-to-do woman, came to him in the Oval Office seeking help at a difficult time in her life, and that he groped her and put his hand on her erect penis. And then, most seriously, a woman named Juanita Broderick, the third to come forward, revealed that, according to her, years earlier, when she'd been a campaign volunteer in Arkansas for one of his gubernatorial campaigns, he manipulated his way into her hotel room and very violently raped her. So a pattern of behavior, two hotel rooms in it, accusations consistently that give us a pattern of something that looks like the things we see in terms of Harvey Weinstein, in terms of the severity of what he did said to have done to Juanita Broderick. And the people whom we would have expected to stand up most loudly and most forcefully on the side of those women who weren't powerful, who weren't well-connected, who except for Kathleen Wiley, weren't within the political world, the group we would have expected to stand up for them would have been contemporary feminists. We would have thought that they would have seen this as abhorrent sexual actions and that these women needed support. But as it happened, or as it turned out, Bill Clinton was such a supporter of important feminist goals, most notably abortion, that the feminists, some of the most prominent in the country, abandoned their beliefs about supporting rape victims or women who said they'd been raped, and very much stood by Bill Clinton. And that's left, you know, leave the politics out of it for a moment, that's left a moral stain that doesn't seem as moral stains tend to not go away until you apologize for them, until you take reckoning of them. And I think the party's kind of realizing that now.
Talk about the moral stain. And you write about the most famous feminist who wrote in an op-ed in the New York Times. You wrote, quote, the notorious 1998 New York Times op-ed by Gloria Steinem surely must stand as one of the most regretted public actions of her life. It slut-shamed, victim-shamed, urged compassion for and gratitude for the man the women accused. It characterized contemporary feminism in a weaponized auxiliary of the Democratic Party. So the ground has shifted, Caitlin Flanagan, compared to what we're seeing today. With what you remember at that time, not just Gloria Steinem, but generally, what was the feeling in the country when we heard these women come out with their accusations against Bill Clinton?
Well, I have a slightly different interpretation that we're seeing the ground shift now. Being an old gal at 56, the ground had shifted back then. You know, feminists had, and women that were Republican women and Democrat women and women who identified in feminists and those who had not, during the Anita Hill, Clarence Thomas sort of scandal, during which, you know, Anita Hill stood up and said, I was sexually harassed by this man. He therefore shouldn't be on the Supreme Court. Women all over the country said, wait a minute, workplace sexual harassment, there's a name for that. And they rose up and everybody started saying in kind of a pre-internet way, hashtag me too, waitresses and nurses and physicians saying these things had happened. So it wasn't the 1950s that he was accused of this. It wasn't an era of women not really understanding that it's okay to talk about sexual things that have been done to you against your will, and it's okay to name the body parts that were involved, that there's no shame, there's no humiliation in it. So it was really shameful then that some of the most prominent feminists, most of all Gloria Steinem, would come forward. And what did she say? She said, well, if he did everything he's accused of, he has sex addiction and he needs treatment. The very things that outrage us so much when we see a Harvey Weinstein going to a very expensive clinic in Arizona to treat a sex addiction, whereas if he were a poor unknown man, he'd be going to prison for these things. So I don't think the ground shifted. I think it shifted before. And now, is this really a shift that's going to stick? I hope so.
There were so many women who accused Bill Clinton, as you mentioned, of sexual misconduct, from Paula Jones to Jennifer Flowers, Kathleen Willey. The allegations range in severity, right, from consensual sexual activity in the White House with Monica Lewinsky to that most serious accusation of rape that you mentioned by Juanita Broderick. Let's hear from Bill Clinton. This is in regard to the Monica Lewinsky scandal. Here he is, January 26, 1998, President Clinton denying he ever had sex with White House intern Monica Lewinsky.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman, Miss Lewinsky. I never told anybody to lie, not a single time, never. These allegations are false, and I need to go back to work for the American people.
But they were not, and during an August 17th, 1998 televised address to the American people, President Clinton acknowledged that he had an inappropriate relationship with White House intern Monica Lewinsky.
Indeed, I did have a relationship with Ms. Lewinsky that was not appropriate. In fact, it was wrong. It constituted a critical lapse in judgment and a personal failure on my part for which I am solely and completely responsible.
During his famous grand jury testimony, President Clinton said if someone had asked him in the present tense if he was having any kind of sexual relationship with Monica Lewinsky, and he said no, that would be true, famously saying it depended on the definition of the word is.
It depends upon what the meaning of the word is.
Yes.
If is means is and never has been, that's one thing. If it means there is none, that was a completely true statement.
Caitlin Flanagan, you write that the Democratic Party needs to make its own reckoning in the way it protected Bill Clinton, in the way it defended Bill Clinton. Was the Democratic Party on the wrong side of history when it comes to the way it handled him?
Well, my opinion is let's not bring Monica Lewinsky into this context here. She didn't accuse him of anything. She said she was in love with him and she enjoyed their sexual, you know,
that was consensual
relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, now, under certain kinds of sexual harassment law, it might not have been. But as far as the, just sort of our general sense, she was a grown up. He was a grown up, kind of tacky to, you know, get oral sex in the Oval Office, but it's not probably the first time and probably not the last time it's going to happen. But it's these other women who aren't talking about a loving, fun, sexual experience, who are talking about violent rape, being told to kiss his penis when they're an employee at the State of Arkansas, being groped against her will in the Oval Office. These are the things that that a reckoning needs to be
so
made
So let's
for.
Hear from Juanita Broderick. Here she is in a 1999 interview with Dateline NBC, sobbing as she told her story of what happened with Bill Clinton in 1978 when he was Arkansas's attorney general. She said they met in a hotel room to discuss business, but it quickly turned into something different. She said she tried to fight back, but he was rough, forceful, and in the end, she gave in under duress.
Did you resist? Did you tell him to stop?
Yes, I told him, please don't. He was such a different person at that moment. He was just a vicious, awful person.
That, Caitlin Flanagan, was different.
Yeah, it's well, if there's a scale of these sorts of things, it definitely fits in with the other two as far as forced sexual events that these people didn't want. But the single most important thing to keep in mind about Juanita Broderick as we think about whether or not the party needs to make a reckoning, both for political reasons and if it's possible for moral behavior to coexist with politics for moral reasons, is that what Juanita Broderick has consistently reported and contemporaneously told five other people is far worse than anything Trump's been accused of.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. Rocket Mortgage is simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS ConsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. We're rethinking and in a way relitigating Bill Clinton's behavior and the country's response to allegations of sexual misconduct and, in one case, rape against Bill Clinton, and how it should shape our thinking in this moment of hashtag Me Too and the daily deluge of accusations from women against very powerful men. We should say at this point that some of what we're talking about here is sensitive material, and some of it may be difficult to hear, especially for children. So with that disclaimer, we invite you to join the conversation. Why now? Is it too easy to say that this was just a different time back then? How should Bill Clinton be held accountable now? How should all of these men facing accusations be held accountable now? Here's a 1999 interview with Barbara Walters, where Monica Lewinsky admitted to an affair with President Clinton. She described him as tender, caring, and that she fell in love with him. But when the story of their affair broke, it was a disaster.
People have no idea what this has done. What this has done, that behind the name Monica Lewinsky, there's a person and there is a family, and there has been so much pain that has been caused by all this, and it was so destructive. It was so destructive.
And here's a 1994 interview with ABC News, where Paula Jones described her encounter with President Clinton as, quote, scary and very unexpected. Here's a clip of Jones talking about what happened when she met Bill Clinton in his hotel room.
We were talking while he leaned up and he tried to pull me over, and he put his hand up my leg. I mean, he jumped, you know, it was just real quick, and he tried to kiss on my neck. And he told me how he liked the way my curves were, and he liked the way my hair went down to the middle of my back. And then, I said, you know, don't do this, you know. I rejected it.
And here's a 1998 interview with Ed Bradley on CBS 60 Minutes. Kathleen Willey describing her account of what happened with President Clinton in 1993 during his first term as president.
He touched my breast with his hand. And then he took my hand and he put it on him.
Where on him?
On his genitals.
And fast forward to October 2016, then-candidate Donald Trump invited four of Bill Clinton's accusers to his second presidential debate with Hillary Clinton. Trump addressed his comments in the Access Hollywood tape, but said that what President Clinton had done was far worse and even cast blame on Hillary Clinton.
That was locker room talk. I'm not proud of it. I am a person who has great respect for people, for my family, for the people of this country, and certainly I'm not proud of it. But that was something that happened. If you look at Bill Clinton, far worse, minor words, and his was action. His was what he's done to women. There's never been anybody in the history of politics in this nation that's been so abusive to women. So you can say any way you want to say it, but Bill Clinton was abusive to women. Hillary Clinton attacked those same women and attacked them viciously, four of them here tonight.
I'm speaking this hour with Caitlin Flanagan, contributing editor at The Atlantic. She's been thinking and writing a lot about this in two pieces, headlined Bill Clinton, A Reckoning, and What Hillary Knew. Let me bring in now from Austin, Texas, Joe Klein, political columnist for Time magazine. He covered Bill Clinton's campaign and presidency for many years. He's the author of the 1996 novel Primary Colors and the 2002 book The Natural, The Misunderstood Presidency of Bill Clinton. Joe Klein, welcome to On Point. Nice to have you.
Good to be here. Thanks.
Also with me from Grayson, Georgia, is Michael Warren, senior writer at the Weekly Standard. Michael Warren, welcome back to On Point.
Thanks for having me, Jane.
So here we are in this incredible cultural moment, Joe Klein, this hashtag MeToo moment. As someone who is with the Clintons, closely covered them in the 1990s, your thoughts about revisiting and re-litigating the many allegations of sexual misconduct against Bill Clinton?
Well, the first thing you have to say is that this remarkable moment is all for the good. And I'm more optimistic than Caitlin is about it. I think that that things that were thoughtlessly done by men in the past can no longer be thoughtless. This extends beyond politics, beyond Hollywood, you know, all the way down to the Main Street Insurance Agency. I think it's a really wonderful turning point for the country. As for Clinton, I must cop to being confessed to be having been a Clinton enabler during that time.
In what way, Joe? In what way?
Well, in that I defended him. We all knew that he was a cad. There's no question about that. But it was the beginning of a period of real viciousness in American politics, and a lot of these charges, especially in my memory, Juanita Broderick's came out of a new hyper-partisanship that seemed very extreme. I mean, it was in the mesh of accusations about Clinton, killing his lawyer and moving drugs out of Mena, Arkansas, and having cocaine parties. I knew Clinton, would never have a cocaine party because of his allergies. He couldn't, he could barely breathe, and it seemed to me that Clinton, for him to be violent with women, for him to be obnoxious with women was entirely credible. For him to be violent with women, to rape someone, seemed to me to be very much unlike who he was as a person.
But looking back on it now, in the context of what we're seeing
looking
now.
Looking back on it now, certainly we should have taken that seriously. I don't know. On balance, I just really don't know whether it rose to the point where he should have resigned or he should have been impeached. I think that you know, that it's a very difficult question. I mean, look, let's use a more recent analogy. The work that the Clinton Foundation did in Africa on AIDS and on creating a healthcare delivery system in Africa was brilliant and wonderful. Against that, you have the fact that all of these sleazy activities were taking place in the Clinton Foundation. He was making $500,000 speeches and so on and so forth. With Bill Clinton, it's never easy. Mm-hmm. And in this case, happily, we know now that there will never for Donald Trump to say what he said is ridiculous. And at this point, to say that Donald Trump is somehow less obnoxious than Clinton might be going a bit too far.
So, Michael Warren, jump in here. I mean, Joe Klein's admitting, you know, he's a Clinton enabler at the time. Looking back, might have been different. How do you see this? I mean, to your mind, are liberals having a moral awakening at this point?
I think some are, particularly liberals who were not of age or young during the Clinton years, who I think maybe didn't appreciate or understand fully. I think back to just last year, BuzzFeed, the online sort of millennial-focused news website, did a really, I think, terrific reexamination of the Juanita Broderick accusations and came away, I think, if you read the piece, and if any young person, certainly young liberal, reads the piece, not feeling as if Bill Clinton's legacy among liberals as being, you know, a good president, a president who had a positive legacy. I don't think a lot of people came away from that article feeling so sure about that anymore. So I think among some liberals, that awakening is happening, and particularly it's happening at a moment when the Clintons are at their least politically powerful and politically potent moment. I think there's some of this that's happening that is opportunistic. You're hearing from liberals, again, saying this at a moment when the Clintons are basically shuffling off the mm-hmm. political stage mm-hmm. here. I think that's an issue.
Is there a political motivation as well? I mean, you know, maybe not such a real reckoning, maybe just giving us a clear conscience to go after Trump. Could that be it, Michael Warren?
Possibly. I don't know. It's hard to describe, motivations for a whole group of people. But I do think that if you are a liberal and you're criticizing people like Roy Moore, you're criticizing people like Donald Trump, you do have to come to terms with the fact that somebody on your side, so to speak, has very credible allegations, as Caitlin laid out earlier in the program, against him that I think I agree with Caitlin that are much worse than anything that Donald Trump has been accused of doing. I've been reflecting on this as well. The extent to which the accusations against Bill Clinton were explained away out of political expediency, out of the view that all of these things may or may not have happened. They sound very bad, but he's defending abortion or other feminist or other liberal causes. And you had, in fact, feminists essentially abandoning the central premise of their political message. It's very reminiscent of what you're hearing from, let's say, Christian pastors in Alabama who are defending Roy Moore, mm-hmm. or evangelical conservatives who defended Donald Trump against mm-hmm. these accusations. It's about political expediency and sort of selling out any kind of ideals or principles out of a very temporary political victory. This seems to be less a problem of partisanship and more a kind of human problem. This seems to be what's happening across Hollywood and media and politics. People protecting the institutions when they really shouldn't be.
Let me throw in here former President Clinton's White House Chief of Staff, Leon Panetta, just a few days ago on Saturday telling CNN that President Clinton had paid his dues when he went through the impeachment process in the midst of all of this 20 years ago.
He more than paid the price for what he did. The fact that he went through an impeachment process as President of the United States, that the House of Representatives voted for articles of impeachment, the Senate did not. But the mere fact that he went through an impeachment process as president means that there will always be a shadow on the legacy of his presidency.
And here's Vice President Joe Biden last year telling NBC that President Clinton indeed paid a price for what happened in the 90s.
I can't make any excuses for Bill Clinton's conduct. I wouldn't attempt to make any excuses for the conduct. But he paid a price for it. He paid a price. He was impeached. And he expressed his deep sorrow and acknowledged what he did.
So, Joe Klein, are they right? Leon Panetta, there's Joe Biden. Are they right? Has he paid a price? Knowing what we know now, was it enough?
Well, I really don't think that he's paid a sufficient price. I agree with Caitlin that we do need to hear from both Clintons, because, you know, what she said often and what their staff said often, I think, was it Sidney Blumenthal who called Monica Lewinsky a little bit nutty, a little bit slutty? I think that they do have to acknowledge this and say it and apologize. On the other hand, the question is this sort of activity, a death sentence for any politician or performer? I mean, you take Al Franken and what he was doing was sleazy comedy in several of these cases, and should he be brought down for that?
Harvey Weinstein, you talk about Bill Clinton, Roger Ailes, you talk about Alfred. I mean, you go down the list. Should they pay a price? I think so.
They absolutely should. And when they are serial offenders, to the extent that Harvey Weinstein and Roger Ailes were, and Bill O'Reilly, and and we'll see about the others. Yes, certainly they should be fired. In a democracy, though, we have a way of firing public figures, and we'll see whether Roy Moore will be fired or hired by the voters in a couple of weeks. I do believe that we start going down a very dangerous road when we believe every accuser. I think that this is that odds are most of them are telling the truth. Probably the vast majority of them are telling the truth. But, you know, in the case of Juanita Broderick, I still have my doubts because of the way he was.
All right. Caitlin Flanagan, respond to that from Joe Klein, please.
Which part?
Well, dangerous road, believing every accuser, Juanita Broderick, maybe not so much.
You know, the standard that's often used about evaluating an old rape claim that was not brought to the police and then comes to light many years later, one of the standards is, if she didn't go to the police, did she tell anyone else at the time about it? And that's seen as a very important bit of information, both to the police and also is brought up always at the trial, if there ever is one, if the statute of limitations hasn't run out. Juanita Broderick told 5 separate people after this happened, and what she told them was consistent. And to me, I'm not a judge and I'm not a jury, but I'm a woman. And when I listened to her tell that story to Lisa Myers, and when I heard about those 5 women, something inside me that every woman listening knows that I'm talking about said, this happened. I'm not the jury. I'm not the legal authority to say that it happened. But every fiber in my body said, that's a woman. Every woman has spent time sitting with a friend who was raped. And that was the experience I got when I listened to her. And again, I voted for Clinton twice. I have never voted for a Republican in my life. So that while I'm often seen as more conservative than many in the mainstream press, which is true, I'm a yellow dog Democrat. I was born into a Democratic Irish family, and I'll die that way. But I believe to my bones that he raped that woman.
Michael Warren, last 30 seconds before our break here. Is there a parallel between Bill Clinton and Donald Trump? How do you see it right now?
I think in the context of what we've been discussing about how people on those men's political sides are dealing with this, there absolutely is a parallel. An effort, I think, to not talk about the thing itself, but to talk about how the thing is brought about, whether it's the Washington Post or this so-called right-wing conspiracy that is trying to bring these people down. I think that's something that we need to move beyond and really address what we're starting to address now, which is the accusations themselves and whether they're credible.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. We're having a big rethink of Bill Clinton years after his impeachment and all the other allegations of sexual misconduct, including rape. And you can join the conversation. Should Bill Clinton have resigned in 98? Would he survive today's political scrutiny? Should the other powerful men now accused of sexual impropriety step aside as well? Where's the line? I'm speaking with Caitlin Flanagan, contributing editor at The Atlantic, who's been writing a lot about this. Joe Klein, a longtime political journalist and author who covered Bill Clinton for years. And Michael Warren, senior writer at The Weekly Standard. During a January 27, 1998 interview with the Today Show on NBC, then First Lady Hillary Clinton blamed conservatives and political agendas as she defended her husband against a series of scandals from the Whitewater real estate deal to allegations of sexual impropriety.
The great story here for anybody willing to find it and write about it and explain it is this vast right-wing conspiracy that has been conspiring against my husband since the day he announced for president.
And here is January 92, during an interview on 60 Minutes, Hillary Clinton responding to questions about her husband's reported infidelity with Jennifer Flowers, who had been reportedly then-presidential candidate Bill Clinton's mistress for many years.
You know, I'm not sitting here as some little woman standing by my man like Tammy Wynette. I'm sitting here because I love him and I respect him. And I honor what he's been through and what we've been through together. And, you know, if that's not enough for people, then heck, don't vote for him.
And last week, Fox News host Sean Hannity said the media and Democrats are having a moment of reckoning with Bill Clinton's multiple accusers. And he took aim at Hillary Clinton, too.
For decades, these accusations, they have dodged and been dismissed and downplayed by the left in this country, by the media in this country, and even worse, those accusers were smeared, slandered, besmirched, including by Hillary Clinton herself.
I want to get some listeners in here. Roxy on this point from Austin, Texas. Hi, Roxy. Thanks for waiting and welcome to the program.
Hi, Jane.
Hi. Go ahead.
Well, my thought on all of this, as far as the sexual harassment and the Bill Clinton errors, I honestly did not want Hillary as my president because I felt she had the power at the time that all of this was going on with her husband as our president to stand up and make a moral choice and a decent choice to represent a voice of all women saying, this is inappropriate, do not stand behind this, do not support this, stand on your own. She could not stand on her own politically. And that's why she stuck by Bill. It had nothing to do with private relationships. I think that if she had stood and said, I don't think this is appropriate, I'm pulling away, and stood on her own, she probably would have been president. Mm. But because she chose to stand behind him for her own political and powerful issues,
she paid the price.
No.
Roxy, thank you very much. Joe Klein, what about that? What about Hillary Clinton?
I agree with the caller. Entirely. In fact, Hillary Clinton lied for her husband in this context. But you said something before that really is important in a contextual basis. You called Whitewater a scandal. I would call it an alleged scandal that turned out to be, you know, a failed real estate deal where they lost money. You know, you have to see the Clinton's response to this, Hillary's response to this in particular, in the context of an nonstop battering that they were getting from the press, from me in part. I mean, you know, I was at Newsweek in the mid-90s when the Paula Jones story came out, and I wrote a piece comparing his sexual looseness with the lack of discipline in his administration. It was called the politics of promiscuity, and I think that ticked him off a lot more than primary colors ever did.
Let's get Aaron in here from Detroit. Hi, Aaron, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
I'll be short. Thanks for doing the show.
Of course.
But please listen to my entire statement. I'll keep it short so that you can get the context of what I'm saying. First, I'll say I'm not trying to minimize any of what has happened to women throughout history, not only in this country, but I think it's enough with this scarlet letter, this witch hunt on everything that men have done in the past. I'm a black male, and if we keep going, African Americans are going to have the right to say, it seems like you are willing to ask for retribution for everything except for what was done to blacks. Those were the times. Times are changing. When times change, we change our behavior. We pass laws and we progress. Those things were happening then. In the 50s, in the 40s, blacks were treated a certain way because that was the norm. Women have been treated a certain way. That was the norm. Mm-hmm. Times are changing. You can't go back in history and ask people to make retribution for stuff that was normal.
So you're saying let's move on. Time to move ahead, Aaron. Is that right?
I'm saying you can't do these witch hunts on these men who were acting normally in the society that was structured.
Aaron, thank you. Caitlin Flanagan?
It was not normal in the 1990s to rape somebody. That was not normal. That was not accepted. You know, it was not normal or accepted to ask someone up to an employee to this to the hotel room, expose yourself to her, and ask for her, for sexual gratification. That we're not talking about the 18th century here. We're talking about people's living memories. They weren't normal. The things of which he is accused were not normal things. And it's interesting, always when I hear men talk about this, they'll often say, well, if we keep going down this road, what will happen? And I say, well, maybe at the end of the road, women won't get raped or won't get grabbed or won't get sexually harassed at the office. Maybe that's what's at the very end of the road.
Aaron, thanks for the call. Here's Ariane in Omaha, Nebraska. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
I was fully prepared for a statement until that last caller, and I found myself getting a little worked up by that. So I'll try and bring myself down a notch. I guess it sort of comes down to my overall point, and it comes down to the power and male fragility. Really, we can rehash what happened with the Clintons. We can talk about all of that. But the fact is we have a president who admitted to sexually assaulting women, to being inappropriate, using vulgar language. It's an ongoing systemic issue that really comes down to what the last caller was kind of getting at. And all due respect to him, again, men had the right to vote. Black men had the right to vote before women did. Historically, women have been removed from power, of power, by men, and that's really what this all comes down to. And we can learn from the Clinton situation, of course. We can learn from all of it. But we have to focus on how to move forward and change that rhetoric that last caller used, that we need to stop talking about. No, we don't. We're just getting started.
Ariane, thank you very much. Michael Warren, jump in here. I mean, you heard what Ariane said there. We should be talking about Trump. I mean, Craig on Twitter agrees. Why aren't we talking about the 16 women who have accused Trump of sexual assault? How do you see it, Michael Warren?
I think that's absolutely what we should be doing. I think, you know, the previous caller's concern about where will this end? I think is reflective of a view that there is a witch hunt going on. I mean, if we just sort of take it as a mathematical question, I would say the large majority of men have not been accused of sexual misconduct in this country. What we're finding now is that a lot of powerful men, talking about power, a lot of powerful men have gotten away with doing or being accused of doing really bad things, and institutions have protected them. And that is, I think, what is changing right now. I think there's a opportunity here when we're talking about it in the realm of politics, for people to step outside of their own sort of political tribe and admit what it is admit that people on their side. Again, I come back to Donald Trump. I come back to Roy Moore. It's a perfect example of something happening right now where you have a number of conservatives, a number of evangelical Christians in Alabama, essentially explaining away what Roy Moore has been credibly accused of. I think the other element of this is it's about credible accusations. Of course, there are going to be false accusations. I think that's just an eventuality. But you have to evaluate these accusations. It's something Caitlin said earlier in the program. five people that Juanita Broderick spoke with at the time, contemporaneously. You could say the same thing about the people who have accused Roy Moore of acting inappropriately or even molesting young women. They were talking about this with people contemporaneously. That sounds to me like a very credible accusation, and it would be good for people to recognize that and accept that, and note that it's much more important to get these things right than to get, say, a Senate seat or a presidency, you know, that fulfills your own political aspirations or your own political agenda.
Joe Klein, do you think that people, that Democrats, would be standing with Bill Clinton now if this were all to have happened today?
No, I don't. I think that the times have changed, and I think going forward we have a very hard and clear green line here, which is that this kind of behavior is no longer tolerable, in, you know, among politicians. But I do want to put this into context. And by the way, I should identify myself as tribeless politically. I mean, I vote for Democrats, I vote for Republicans. Both parties, to me right now, seem to have gone off the deep end, moving to their respective bases. But to put it in context, the last 50, 60 years has been the most remarkable period of human rights advancement in the history of our species. That goes for civil rights. It goes for women's rights. It goes for gay rights. We have made remarkable progress. I think that that Caitlin is absolutely right, that the goal is to have a society where none of this sort of behavior ever happens. But I do think that we have made remarkable strides, and what's happening right now is the next natural step toward, you know, toward human equality.
Let's get Evelyn in here from Nashville. Hi, Evelyn. I'm glad you waited. Welcome.
Hi. Hi, Jane. I just wanted to make a comment about Ms. Flanagan's remark about Monica Lewinsky.
Okay.
And the fact that it was consensual between she and President Clinton. And I just want to point out, she was really emotionally, if not chronologically, a child at that time. He was the most powerful person in the world. There's an extreme power differential, and he had no right to take advantage of her. And I hope Ms. Flanagan reconsiders her position.
Let me ask her about it. Evelyn, thank you for the call in Nashville. Caitlin Flanagan.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I certainly agree, particularly in terms of the hypocrisy of the feminist movement at the time. Coming out of Anita Hill, feminism had coalesced around a definition of workplace sexual harassment that made no allowance for even kind of flirtation in the workplace. So when feminists came out and said, oh, this is a consensual sexual relationship, that was a great another element of hypocrisy. To my mind, it was, I think that a woman of her age, 21, is empowered enough to make a sexual decision of her own, and that the varieties of sexual experience could include wanting to be sexual with someone who's much older, maybe that's married. I don't condone, it's not my cup of tea, but, you know, I, you know, it's certainly like I'm never going to give Bill Clinton Man of the Year award. But of all the things he's done, what I'm concerned about is raping Juanita Broderick and what the two other women said about him, Kathleen Wiley and Paula Jones. So Monica Lewinsky to me is way down the ladder of things that he's been accused of doing or has admitted doing.
Evelyn, thanks so much for the call. I've just got a couple of minutes left here. I'm curious what the panel thinks in this sort of hashtag Me Too moment that we're going through, this cultural shift, if you will, that many people are referring to. Do you think we'll see real, tangible change? And what exactly would that look like? I've got about 2 minutes. Joe Klein, you first.
Yeah, I do. I absolutely do. Although I have to say that living in the world of journalism and coming up through the underground press and Rolling Stone, most of my editors, most of my bosses have been women over the years, thank God. They're, you know, in many ways. What am I trying to say? I'm trying to say that the world has already changed to a tremendous extent, and I think it's going to continue to change on the merits. I mean, you know, 60% of the people graduating from 4-year colleges mm-hmm. now are women. Mm-hmm. I think we'll see a woman president before very long. I really do think that we have turned a corner.
Michael Warren, what would change look like at this point?
Well, I think if you're going to have change on this, you need to have accountability. And it's something I've been talking about, the accountability of whether it's, you know, people in the industry in Hollywood, you know, refusing to cover for people like Harvey Weinstein or Kevin Spacey or these others who have been accused, people in politics, people in their political tribe, refusing to cover for their side for the short-term political gains. I think something like what Caitlin has been writing about is exactly what's needed. Holding, I don't hold it against any liberal, and I don't include Caitlin in this group, who has changed their mind about Bill Clinton, even for sort of partisan mm-hmm. reasons. It's time to hold those people accountable.
Caitlin Flanagan, we started with you. I'll give you the last word here.
Well, I kind of disagree with the premise that we're fine-tuning things now and that we're really close to getting it right. You know, Charlie Rose, that kind of like boring old foghorn leghorn guy of morning television that like you can't even stay awake when you're watching him, he was seriously, profoundly sexually harassing young women who were trying to build their career. I don't think we're anywhere near fine-tuning. I think we have a country that's got a really big mess that we're just beginning to find out about. I hope we go on and on and on with these revelations.
Caitlin Flanagan, Joe Klein, Michael Warren, excellent discussion. Thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it all. Listeners, thank you as well. And you can continue the conversation. Get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point.